Hi, Alice, and Elsie too, if she's around. It's almost 10 o'clock on Wednesday night, and I thought maybe I'd get busy and on this tape and get it off to you for what it's worth. I'm sure it's quite late and probably hasn't anything on the other side that'll be of any definite value to you, and I wish that I could remember more that would be of interest, but perhaps the older ones were in on more things than I was at the time we lived there in South Portland and other areas around about town. Either that or their memories are better. Anyway, I imagine that you could get more material from them, but referring to the other side, when I was down at the beach, the ocean there between Ocean Park and Long Beach, where Janet and Doc live. One day when she was, I don't know what she was doing, I think she was making a tapioca pudding, sound effects anyway, would indicate that's what she was doing, if I remember the day. And I was sitting near her, we were gabbing. Thought perhaps being as she grew up in the same neighborhood that I did and probably was there a longer, I know that she was there a longer time than I was because we moved away when I was seven, I think I was 7 years old, so it was rather limited in my period of intelligence and so forth there, and under 7 years of age it wouldn't amount to a great deal, but she and all of her relatives lived there for such a long time, and probably there would be things that would be of interest in the way of happenings, but like she said when we were talking about it, she said that I was permitted to do a lot of things that she wasn't able to do and got around a lot more than she did. She said that her, being as she was the only one in the family, her parents kept their thumb on her pretty tight, and she wasn't involved in the conversation and the situations that we were as a family. And she said she remembered that she felt very frustrated as a youngster because the minute it got dark she had to come in and we'd be out playing alley oops and free around the wood piles, and she had to come in because it was time to go to bed or something like that. But anyway, her voice doesn't come in on the recording because she was around the other side of the divider screen which separates her little Pullman kitchen from the rest of their living room, and she was busy using the egg beater and stirring this thing on the stove, and but I was trying to push the right button so that she could remember things that I might have forgotten. But it could probably all be boiled down to maybe one or two sentences, but anyway, I'll just leave it as it is, and you can run it through maybe when you're doing something else, and that way pick out if there's anything there at all you can use. In fact, it might be too late by now. I realize that it's been quite a while since we first discussed the that area, but anyway, I wanted to talk to you, so we'll let this side go anyway, whether the other side means anything or not. If you hear a tick-tock going above my head here, it's because the cuckoo clock is very busy. It's the one Ed and Doris had sent from Germany, and Harry was so fond of theirs that they made up their minds they were going to bring one back as a note of appreciation for our house-sitting for them. Got here too late, but anyway, Harry knew that they'd purchased it and only made them wish that they'd brought it with them and then sent some of the other things in its place, but perhaps something might have happened to it. It's rather hard to carry one of those around, I'm sure, and so it came packed from the store from which they purchased it and came through in fine condition. The bird's gonna pop out in a few minutes here, and this is where I'm spotted underneath it, so anyway, you'll know the local color when it comes out and shouts 10 o'clock. Your mom said that you arrived home, I believe it was on a Sunday night, well, Sunday afternoon, I guess it was, about 2:30 or so. You beat us by a little bit arriving in San Diego. We got in about, well, I think it was around 6:30 by the time we pulled into Ed and Doris's driveway. We cut out over the hill from Highway 5, and instead of coming down through town, and that cut us off a little bit, but even then, it was that late in the day. Makes me wonder if our paths crossed any place. One time, I don't remember just where it was, but I could have sworn that I saw your car go by and you and Elsie in it, but it might have been just wishful thinking that I had seen you. I was telling Janet and Doc that you had gone south, and I didn't know what your destination was, nor when you'd be turning around to get back on your return trip, but not that I was wishing that you would be going the other direction at all, but anyway, I thought perhaps it was your car at the moment that I caught it going by on the highway. We were, we left Portland about 9 o'clock, I believe it was, and and we had our lunch at a roadside rest near, I think it was near Roseburg. I'm not really sure. These freeways, as they go on the edge of these places, I lose my sense of location continually over and over again, so that's a wild guess. But it was a beautiful spot, and like Oregon seems to have these days for roadside rest, they're really wonderful and so usable and beautiful, too. The atmosphere here was different from the Immigrant Springs, where we stopped on the way to Boise and on the way back, and that was, of course, in the larger trees and the evergreens and all, and this was more or less out in the open, with the exception of a few shade trees and many autumn leaves that were such a pretty color. We saw so many pretty ones on the way down. It was a funny lunch. You'd have laughed if you could have seen us, because being as we didn't prepare lunch to begin with, Janet just put in what we had left over from the beach in a sack, and it rattled around a square of cheese, and I think it was a loaf of bread, and she had baked cookies just the day before we left down there. She made chocolate chip cookies and cinnamon rolls, and they looked so good, little miniature cinnamon rolls, and they looked so good, and she just handed me one cookie, and she said, "I'm saving the rest for our lunch." Well, we got started out of Portland, and then all of a sudden, I think we were about an hour out of Portland, and pretty soon she says, "Aw, nuts." I didn't know what she was referring to there. I knew she was disgusted about something, and she says, "Guess what? I left the cookies and the cinnamon rolls down in our freezer at the beach." So we just concentrated on them and had to let it go at that, but all the way down, we could just taste those cookies, and she'll probably be very happy to have them when she gets back. But we stopped at, I believe it's called Dillard, where they raise the Dillard melons, is that, or grow them rather, is that correct? Anyway, it was a roadside stand that was just wonderful, and it's fruit and vegetables, they had melons and things. She bought some plums. Oh, what the kind they were, what, I don't know what brand they were, but they were so sweet and good. And then she bought two cantaloupe. Everything looked so fresh. Some of the stands looked like they had leftovers, but this one was the exception, and it was on the right-hand side as we were going down. And so she hopped out of the car and brought back these two melons and these plums. Well, they looked like prunes, but they were fatter. They were the dark blue variety. And there, I told you you'd hear him. Well, now that he's had his say, I'll go back to mine. But we didn't have anything at all in the way of table tools, like such as a spoon or a fork or even a knife or anything like that with us. Ordinarily, Janet does carry all those things, but being as she didn't leave directly from home, it was another situation, and so, because they stayed two nights in Portland and with Mabel. So She's the best lunch putter upper of big bag variety, brown bags and big ones. But I had a little jackknife that was sterile enough, I felt. I didn't run it through a test, but it satisfied me, and I had that in my purse. And Doc also had one. And so when we stopped at the roadside stand, Doc did a beautiful job of cutting one of the melons in slices, and we ate our, well, we had bread and cheese, and what else was it? Seems like there were two or three other snack items that were awfully good. Can't remember now what they were. But the melon, we just kind of sliced along the rind in little sections and then cut down, and that made bite size. And we'd spear it with the point of the knife, and it really went pretty good, and it didn't hold us up at all in our progress of eating it, and it was delicious, just melted in our mouth. The flavor of these things are so different. So that was a good lunch anyway, and then we started on, and the first night we went down the coast over Crescent City. Yeah, there's Crescent Lake is a lake, but Crescent City is on the coast. And we hit down from there, and we saw something, and I don't know whether you've ever seen it before or not, but we saw something that we'd never seen before, and people were pulling out on a little pull-out place alongside the highway, and it was just, it seemed like it was just as we began to get into sort of their, well, it was along the coast, in other words, the ocean. We were following right along the edge of the ocean, and we were up quite a distance. Looking down, we could hear it very plainly as it roared below us, and there was a break there, I imagine, oh, perhaps a couple, 300 feet alongside the highway's edge, where normally we could have seen the ocean. And that was just, we looked right down on a bank of fog. It was like being above the clouds or above the fog in a plane at a high elevation. In fact, I didn't know it was the ocean, and I asked Doc, I says, what's that roar down there? What can that be? And he says, well, that's the ocean. It's right down below us. And instead of it being smooth, it looked just like waves, like frosting on a cake if you'd run a fork through it or something of that nature that would make little ridges. But it was just solid without a break at all, and it was out as far as we could see, and to the north and to the south. In other words, there wasn't a speck of water visible, and here was all this right down at our feet for miles. It's hard to describe. I was wishing that I could reproduce it some way or other. I did take a picture, which of course didn't show because it looked just like the sky. But it was the oddest feeling, and I have seen fog before below my line of vision, but I've never seen anything quite like that. So anyway, we went on and stayed that night at Eureka. Janet was the one that would look for a motel. She'd hop out of the car and go in and see if it was, what it was like and how much and what accommodations there were and so forth. So we stopped. The first motel that we stopped at, Doc and I sat in the car, and she went in the office, and she followed a man out, and looked at a couple of them, and two right together, one I guess it was, and then the one next to it came back. She climbed in the car, and Doc says, well, I guess we don't stay here. And she started to laugh, and she said, my goodness, she says, talk about lack of good business. She went in the office there and asked if they had vacancies, and they said yes, and a man stepped forward, and she asked if she could look at it, and he says, well, if you think I'm going to show you all these units, he says, you're mistaken. I don't know, he blew off and on there over what he wasn't going to do and so forth, and his wife looked terribly embarrassed, looked like an awfully nice person, Janet said, but the man really blew his top. I don't know what was wrong with him, but he certainly wasn't looking for tenants for the night, that's for sure. So we looked at, went by several other places that had no vacancies, or they were so elaborate that we thought perhaps they wouldn't be suitable anyway. Although we were looking for something reasonably nice. And on the way out of town, on the it was on the on Broadway, right on the highway out of Eureka, we found a real desirable place. It was called the Olympic Motel. Very nice, and we had two bedrooms and twins in one and double in the other, so, and bath and shower and that sort of thing. But it was real neat and clean and very comfortable and as nice as anybody would ever want for. And it didn't cost any more than the other place where the old crank was located. So that's where we stayed, and then headed out of town after we got our sleep out the next morning. And we ate our breakfast in at Meyer's Flats on 101 there in the Redwoods. It was a cute place, and the old cafe there where they had their own baked items and so forth. But we had a real, real tasty lunch there with interesting surroundings for many reasons I might like to go into sometime. I wish you'd been there. It would have been appealing to you, I'm sure, the people that came in, the contrasts. I was wishing for a Dick Tracy kind of Kodak that could snap a picture without anyone being aware of it. I certainly would have gone to town that morning. Very interesting people, and they had some units there down a little chapel, and like Janet said, we could just stay there for a long, long time and enjoy every minute of it. But we went on, and the Marguerite Guest and Bob, her husband, and their son Darryl, a teenage boy, live in Livermore. She's the daughter of Mr. and Mrs. Hunt, your mother and Esther met while I was there, friends of ours and Janet's too. And they had, through their folks, had extended an invitation for us to stop if we possibly could, so they insisted that we stay all night, so we spent the late afternoon and evening and all night and the next morning with them. It was quite warm, but in fact, Janet and I had removed our shoes and ridden barefoot most of the day, and along the coast it wasn't too bad, but Livermore was quite a bit warmer. We sat out in the patio and cooled off until almost bedtime, and they had some slides that were real interesting that they'd taken on some recent trips. So we asked to see those, and they were so good. So we were there for breakfast in the morning and then pulled out, oh, I think it was around 9 or 10 o'clock maybe, something like that. And then we see, we cut down past San Jose, and then over farther south, we cut over to Monterey, Pacific Grove, 17-mile drive, and along in there. Went down one to, what would it be? Would it be Long Beach anyway, and there we... Then we came on down along the beaches from there. Being as it was a Sunday, it was terribly crowded with swimmers and surfers and all that sort of thing. Cars parked on both sides of the highway as we were driving along, and on 101 there. And people cutting across, going to their cars, and the beaches were just solid. I think there was more people than sand, really, escaping the heat. Wasn't too bad right along the water, but because of the slow progress that we made, we noticed the heat a little bit more perhaps. And Doc stopped at one place, and we got a root beer and drank it in the car and made the ice last as long as we could. It really tasted awfully good. We were thirsty and warm then. But it really wasn't unbearable at all. We saw the fires as we came from, where would it be, Ventura, that's it. Between Santa Barbara and Ventura, believe it was closer to Ventura. Anyway, it was on the left side of the highway that we saw flames shooting up, and no, just for quite a long distance. The hills were just gray with ashes. Didn't seem too far away either. If the wind had been strong, I'm sure it would have wiped out many, many homes between the highway and the location of the flames that we saw. Then we came on in, as I said before. Oh, no, I forgot to tell you that we spent the next night at Santa Maria. We just coasted along, didn't leave early in the morning. We felt no pressure at all, either in the driving or in our getting started in the morning. Just took our time, and we're quite methodical and everything, so that we didn't just fool around, but we didn't feel pressurized at all. Doc's that kind of person, that he likes to gear his driving and his day accordingly to not have to feel like we're rushing around. So we stayed at Santa Maria and had Mexican food that night at a restaurant there on the main drag. And I had one unit and they had one across, and after we'd watched TV a little while, I was going across and write some notes, and then my pen went dry, so I put on Ray's organ music and turned out the light, crawled in bed, and enjoyed that until time to go to sleep. Certainly have been enjoying her playing. That sister of yours can certainly handle the organ, and it's on the speaker here. It sounds grand. I'm going to have a lot of fun playing that over and over again. Certainly glad she did it for me. It's going to be an answer to my hunger for music for some time to come, I'm sure. Then we didn't eat breakfast there at Santa Maria. We went on to Anderson's Pea Soup place there near Solvang, that is right on the highway. And it was, I don't know, a couple of hours perhaps from the time we had gotten up in the morning. It was not too much later from our leaving time, because it isn't very far from Santa Maria. But there were a lot of people in there having breakfast, and guess what we had? Doc had a man-sized breakfast of sausage and eggs and hash browns, but Janet and I had two big servings of the split pea soup and some of their homemade bread, which they serve with it. And finished off, she had a strawberry and she had a chocolate and I had a strawberry milkshake. How's that for breakfast? Split pea soup and a milkshake. But, oh, was it delicious. I couldn't have planned it that way if I'd tried, but being as it was there right on the menu, who could help it? And then we went up to Solvang. I'd never been there before, and that was fun. And so we left there around noontime, I guess, something like that. And getting into San Diego, as I said before, Sunday evening. I want to thank both you and Elsie for all the chauffeuring you did for me while I was up there in Portland. It certainly was wonderful to have you drive me around, and I appreciate it so much. And it was good to get acquainted with Elsie, too. I feel like it was real good to get to know her, and I appreciated it and really enjoyed all the conversation and the different subjects that we reviewed, and our trip to Boise, and the opportunity to have that much longer with you both. And Doris was saying that she wished she could get to know Elsie too, and she's been peppering me with questions, and now that Janet and Doc are gone again, we left Monday. We're going back by way of Nevada and Waypoints, Bishop and up that way. So I don't know just when they'd be getting back, but I came home Monday night. So Doris and I haven't had a chance to really go into all the details yet, but I'm sure that she won't put it off for very long. She's already checked up on a lot of things and asked a lot of questions, but I still have a long way to go before I get to the end of my material. I'm awfully sorry that the contact with the don't know how they pronounce it, Amends, I guess, A-M-E-N-D-S, I don't know them, but it's Mrs. Dunkelberger's mother. Now, I understand that she's a very nice person and would be interesting to interview, and she'd be just more than happy to sit down and just give you all the time you wanted and answer any of your questions and perhaps part with some of her material that might have some records of information way back in that area of Willamette Boulevard. But when I mentioned to Janet from what your mother said that this daughter-in-law had been there, Janet says, oh no, she says, I've never met her, but I've heard about her. And she's the thorn in the flesh. Apparently the family feel that way, although they've never come out and said so. So I'm sorry that she was there at the time you called. And however, Janet said that any time that, of course, this probably wouldn't be available now that you've, so much time has gone by, but I mean, it would be available, but not desirable on your part, being as you were gone that week and all. But anyway, I'm awfully sorry that the situation didn't work out better than that, being as you took the trouble to go and make the call. But that's the way things go sometimes, don't they? Well, anyway, I'm hoping that Elsie's mother is feeling okay. I did hear that she was having some problems, and I hope by now that she's feeling much better and that that you did have a real good trip, even though it was quite limited. There never is half enough time, is there, to get going on something like that. Well, it's certainly different to be back here. In one way, it's I'm sure it was well-timed, considering everything. I'm going to make a call in a couple of days. Doris did some investigating while I was just briefly before I returned on this Social Security bit, and all they said they had was a microfilm of the application and so forth, and the rest was back in Chicago. But I was to call back in 15 days from the time she made her call, and they said they might have something to report. So far, I've heard nothing, and it's been a long, long time, it seems, since they terminated everything in May. But anyway, I have the name of the person to contact, and a telephone call will be advisable, I think, and I'll be able to do that in a day or two, and I hope that they have something to offer in the way of information. But I feel that I need to be here on the job to do what I can to terminate this bit so that things can get into a routine and I'll know some of my answers. That will make me feel better, I'm sure, even if it isn't such good news. At least I'll have some kind of news and be able to work things around accordingly. I'm sure it'll be favorable. It has been up to this point, and I feel that it will continue to be that way. I have no worries in that direction. Just good business is what I intend to follow and see if I can't get some action at the other end. Investigated some other possibilities, so I have more information than I've had before, but none of them are available at the present time, being as I need another birthday. Certainly miss the folks up there, you and Elsie included, and wish that we could squeeze this state of California and a little bit of Oregon together a little bit so the distance would be less and we could see each other more often. I certainly enjoyed being with your mom and Esther and have many pleasant memories of the days spent there. And seeing the rest of the folks too was certainly something I have looked forward to for a long time, and it's been a wonderful visit for me to see all that I did see, which were many. Well, this is about the end of this long gabfest here, Ellis. I hope you're not bored, but perhaps you could be doing this while you're doing something else that won't be an entire waste of time. Perhaps we can hear from you once in a while by way of cassette. Let me know how things are going up there. By the way, I was wondering if you or Elsie ever have access to the Good Housekeeping. I think it was the October number that had an article in there concerning Fred McMurray's wife and himself and their family seems that they spent their honeymoon up at Jenny Lake in the Tetons and had an experience with a bear. I ran across the magazine at the beach and was interested in reading that particular article. Anyway, this is almost the end of the tape, and we'll be saying goodbye this time. And if you can ever get this far south, be sure and allow plenty of time and have a good visit. Get it out of our system one of these days. How'd that be? Certainly be wonderful for you and Elsie to get down this way. I had an awful time with my throat at the beginning of this. I just come in from out of doors, and apparently a little allergy boomeranged, and I had a frog, and I just couldn't get rid of it. I hope you don't mind all the sound effects through the tape there. We'll say so long for now. But I promised Ellis that I'd see what I could think up about that area, and I just haven't done it. I've been thinking about it, but I haven't done anything definite so far. But he was a German fellow, wasn't he? I don't know how he spelled his name. I know it was Liebern, Mr. Liebern. He wore a little skull cap on his head, you remember?
Yeah.
What's that?
Neubauer.
What about her?
We're old-timers.
Neubauer, yeah.
And
there was a... Now, I don't know. There were some people up on the Sullivans there on the corner, too, that lived on the corner of Water Street. But Mr. Liebern's store was where they had the Penny Canvey, where we used to...
I was going to watch this, but I didn't get it done. So I'm going to leave it because I've got to wear it.
Oh, you have to wear it.
Probably.
He had yardage, and did he have shoes too?
I thought he had leather goods.
Shoes?
I've always been fond of the leather.
And gifts?
Yeah.
And remember when we used to go in there with our roller skates on, he'd have it fit and send us out and make us take our skates off. He didn't want us to skate into the store and out again.
But I've always been fond of
the That was across. Yeah. He was across from the school about, wasn't he? A kind of kitty corner from the school.
Yeah.
And then Hensberger's had the grocery store where Dad had his running account there, and he paid it every weekend, and then I'd get the little striped bag of candy to take home, probably about 2 cents worth, something like that, on the strength of a whole bill. And didn't Mr. Haffenden, no, was it Mr. Haffenden that used to have that store years before? I don't remember. Probably Edna would.
I don't recall anything about Mr. Haffenden.
But that was Hansberger's store. Do you remember who ran the drugstore on the corner there of Hamilton Avenue? What was the name of that street where the streetcar ran? Well, where the streetcar ran, because it ran there to the end of the line where the... Where the, well, that was Corbett Street. They called it the S car. And then they, the Fulton car? Yeah, but it had a big S on the front of it, you remember? And then the Fulton car, it left from a different location downtown, but didn't it take the same tracks out there and then down over the hill and on out to Fulton? But the Fulton car was a different kind of car, though. I don't think so. It was a different kind of car, more like the Portland Heights car, it seemed like.
No.
It had sections in the front and the back or something, as I remember. But the saloon, the S car went down as far as the saloon there. Was that Corbett Street, though, that ran north and south?
Mm-hmm.
And then it was Hamilton Avenue that ran east and west up the block where we lived, which was Bancroft. Oh, yeah. But we lived on Water Street, 1073 Water Street, just around the corner. And you were on the corner of Water, facing Hamilton Avenue. And didn't your grandmother have a vegetable man for a long time that used to come around with a horse and buggy, a horse and wagon?
What was it?
Italian.
Tony? Called him Tony and he came around with the vegetables?
Yeah, Italian.
Yeah. And then the ice man used to come around with a horse and wagon too. Remember, he used to climb on the tailgate of the wagon and get up and get pieces of ice while he was delivering it. And the little German band used to come around. Remember that? Or used to come around and come down Water Street. I can remember them coming down there on our street and playing all those German numbers, and they had an oompa effect.
Mm-hmm.
And do you remember anything about the shoemaker there that we went to for so long on Corbett Street? And he played the violin in the back of his shop?
He was right next to Lieberman's store.
Yeah, he was right next to Lieberman's store, I think. He lived there part of the time. I don't know, did he make violins or just play one? Well, it was some kind of a musical instrument. It seemed to me it was a violin. I may be wrong, but he was a musician of some sort, and yet he was the best shoemaker that ever was. And long after we went down to Kenton, we used to take our shoes back up there to have them fixed. I don't remember his name either, but I'd know him if I saw him. And the postman that, remember our postman that delivered for so long?
I remember him very well.
Yes. He used to blow a whistle every time he'd leave anything in the mailbox. Yeah. And what about the gypsies? Do you remember anything about the gypsies? You don't? Huh. That's funny. Well, I remember they used to camp out there where Slavin Road cut off from Corbett Street and went out anglewise toward Terwilliger. Remember where Slavin Road went and all that bare spot out there? That's where they used to pitch their tents. And then, no, it isn't there now. I don't know, it's all built up, I guess. Or a highway or something in there, I don't know what. But anyway, they used to, some of them pick up food items at Hansberger's store, and I remember having them sit out on the bread box out in front of where the bread was delivered from the wholesale. And they'd sit out there, and I was always afraid to go to the store while they were around, I know. With all the stories that went around, I don't know how true they were. Dot Lucas said she remembered them. In fact, she said that she thought some of them, when they stayed there in a length of time, some of them even entered the classes there at Holman. She said she had some pictures of them, and when I was over there, she couldn't find them anyplace, just my luck. Then, let's see, who was the principal of Holman School when we were going there? Wasn't it Mr. Sherwood? I think his name...
Was it?
Well, there was a man. I think his name was Sherwood. We both started at the same time.
Yeah, it could have been when I started. But later on, I was going.
And how long did Grace Reeves teach there? Do you remember? How long did Grace Reeves teach there?
At Holman.
Yeah, she had, at Holman, she had...
She wasn't there when I went.
But she had Louise and Ruth, I know, and Ray, I guess. I don't know how many others. Did Emily have her, or did she?
Yeah.
Emily had her, too.
Hmm? Uh-huh.
Did Emily ever teach there?
No.
She started teaching at Franklin. Hmm?
Started teaching at West
Lynn. West Lynn? Oh, but she didn't ever teach in the South, in the Holman School.
And then she went from grade school. And she taught for a while up in...
Oh.
I think then
she
went into the high school.
Do you remember any of the other older teachers? Miss Ogden was our teacher, and she taught there for a long time.
Yeah,
I think she knew Uncle Vern. I don't know how, but she used to ask me about him once in a while. Oh, I didn't know that.
Her mouth. Oh. Beautiful voice, but I
was actually in the front row. No, that isn't awful. That's what kids remember.
Mm-hmm.
I remember she told me how to, she taught me how to tell time. She wore a wristwatch, and I thought anybody that wore a wristwatch was really in the money. And so I can remember going out to the drinking fountain in the hallway there, and I was in first grade, and she had her wristwatch on her arm, and somehow or other she happened to be going by, and she says, "Do you know how to tell time?" And I said, "No." And so she says, "Well, I'll show you." So she taught me how to tell time on a wristwatch. I thought that was pretty neat. She used to keep me after school to clean the erasers, and then she'd ask me about, I think it was Uncle Vern, as near as I can remember. I wasn't too conscious of the fact.
She wasn't married.
No, she didn't ever marry, I don't think. It seemed like everybody knew Uncle Vern. I don't know how that all happened, but for some reason she must have met him sometime or other. And remember when I had the chicken pox, how they checked me through before they let me come back after I'd been out of school about 2 weeks, and I felt like I'd had leprosy or something. Do you remember when they opened up the Terwilliger Boulevard, when they first built that and they opened it up, what kind of a celebration they had?
I don't remember that, but I
do
remember
the fireworks at the Oaks. It seemed like they had some...
People used to sit on the hill and watch.
Some kind of a celebration up at Mount Hood when they burned colored flame or something that you could see from a long way off. But the fireworks at the Oaks we used to watch from our balcony. Didn't they have a balloon ascension out there too? Yeah, I think they did. Seems like maybe it was Hillsborough. I'm all mixed up on that. I know they used to have them at Hillsborough, Chute Park. But I think they, when was it they had the fireworks? Was that 4th of July? Every year.
Hmm?
Where did you see them?
No, we saw them in Mount Hood, up in the Boulevard, or anywhere out in some place.
Oh.
I think it was from
we used to watch from our balcony, I'm sure. That was a good enough view.
Mm-hmm.
And, let's see, what else went on? Oh, yeah.
I never did remember these well in
Well, wasn't that the, you remember when the steam train used to run out 4th Street and across the trestle there up above us on, crossing Hamilton Avenue?
Yeah, I remember the train.
And wasn't it the steam train trestle that we used to walk across with Earl, the three of us, when we'd go out and pick dogwood and stuff? Seems like Earl took us across a few times. We'd go out there and look for bouquets for the house or for church or something. And we were always thrilled when we went across the trestle because we never knew when a train was coming and how far it was to the step out place where they had the water barrels. And, I don't remember how far it was down, but it seemed like a long way. It looked like a long way in between the ties, I know, and we were walking along. And the green electric went along down below. Where was that? That was down on Macadam, wasn't it? Go into Macadam there at the foot of Hamilton. And when we'd coast down the hill in the wintertime on our sleds, we'd shoot across Corbett Street there and down the hill toward Macadam, and somebody would stand at the bottom and watch for a train coming. I don't know what had ever stopped us. If we had known there was one coming, we'd probably shot across just the same, but that was a route we took out to Ryan Place to Bill and Louise, as I know, was on that green electric. It was quite a trip. I don't remember. What else? Let's see. Is there anything else that you can think of that was might be exciting or interesting? What was, how many houses up there did your grandfather own? He owned about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, about 6 of them, didn't he? Do you remember anything about that Episcopal church that was there, a little one that... seemed like... Didn't we go to... Oh, was that who we went with when we went down to the First Presbyterian, wasn't it? And they had the Christmas program where we walked in our bare feet. Yeah, it was on one of the psalms that we learned and we sang and waved palm branches or something. And I must have been under 7 years old because it was when we lived there. Must have been about 5, 6 years old, maybe.
Really? No. I remember that occasion.
I'd never seen anything like that before. But remember their minister? I always thought he was, I didn't know any different, and I always thought he was in his bathrobe because he wore this long robe with a cord around it like a bathrobe cord. And I never could figure out why he didn't get dressed. He went calling in the neighborhood, and I know when we went there that time, I must have gone to church with her or something, because I'd never been in a place where they had prayer, the kneeling places, you know. And I stumbled all over them when I went to sit down. I walked in the aisle, and I fell all over those kneeling places. I am too. Seemed like we were there at Christmas time, and one time they had a Halloween party and they invited us, remember? But he taught us tricks with the tennis ball. Cliff used to send me a box of duds, I guess they were, from his tennis games. And anyway, this Episcopal minister that used to go around, evidently he was pretty good with youngsters, and he showed me how he could do tricks with the ball, rolling up his arm clear to his shoulder and back down again without it running off the track. We thought he was pretty neat. And I don't know how long they held services there, but evidently it was
they had services in church
Are they the ones that built the building there on Gibbs? I mean, on, that wasn't Gibbs Street, it was on Corbett and...
It was Episcopalian for a long time.
Yeah.
And then it was closed for a while, and then the AC church, I don't know what happened, it seemed that it was closed.
Yeah, we rented it, used it for a while.
Yeah, we held services
out there,
didn't we?
Yeah. Quite a while. And, I don't remember what happened. Do you remember when Mr. Unrath had that horse? And the barn was right next to our property. One wall of it was right on our line, the back of the property. And you don't?
Out late at night, my mother was always very careful to have him come in. All the other kids could play out after dark, but I had to be around.
We used to play Ollie Alts and Free around the wood piles.
Yeah. Well,
but,
my mother let me play at the age that, you know, Teddy, I was never allowed to be out that way.
Yeah.
And I remember I used to get so mad because everybody was doing such a good time out there. And my mother always called me out.
About the time you started having fun, huh? We used to play underneath the street light. I don't think that we ever had to come in until it was bedtime. But I don't know why you didn't remember then, Ras, because of course they were right next door to us.
Yeah,
but they used to go down and
I had no contact with them. I was a boy child. It was actually
well, it wasn't the kids. The youngsters that I remember, but I remember him and his wife because
yeah.
They were so noisy.
Yeah, I practically knew his father, and they'd get in his car right there and go on their business. And I remember one thing I do remember about that street was it had terrible grading, and when you put a car on the top side, I always thought it came in on the bottom. And when you did come in on the bottom side, you always wanted to get you out. I didn't know how stupid
it
was.
No, it isn't really steep.
It seemed to me it was terrible. Do you remember that?
No, I didn't remember it was steep because we used to roller skate on the sidewalk. It wasn't too bad. Maybe so. Well, it slanted toward the sides, I know.
And we never had rain starting with my father. Was he had a little hole right inside the door, and if I did saw the people in the hole in that door, and he had a little hole in the door.
But I remember when Unrath used to go down to the saloon there on the car line and get drunk, and then they'd bring it home by the bucket full and get more drunk, and they overflowed. Of course, that isn't the part that I was trying to remember, but it was his horse that he thought so much of. I don't know whether he ever treated it like it should have been, but at least he put the flag up at half-mast when the horse died. I couldn't remember the horse's name. Edna was talking about it the other day, and she was telling me about, called it by name and everything. And but I know he had a big high flag pole in the front yard, and that thing was, the flag was at half mast after the horse died. When his wife died, I don't know. I don't think anything happened then much, but
but the horse, she was ill too.
It was a wild time.
Well, that was the extent of that, Ellis. I don't remember what interfered, but anyway, we came to a sad end, and I guess perhaps that was the end of our inspiration anyway, that anything that we could remember. I didn't realize that Doc was out cutting the lawn. Well, it isn't a lawn, but anyway, it's grass on the other side of the road up against the trees, and then a little bit of lawn in and out of the huckleberry bushes there, and he had them lawnmower going all the time. That's what that other sound is there. Sounds like a threshing machine, but I'd forgotten all about it. It sounded so far away when we were sitting there talking that I didn't realize it would be picked up and get on the tape. Well, anyway, that's that. By the way, did you ever get your leak in the bathroom there, the tub drain fixed? And did the owner ever fix your door? And I was wondering if the apartment was rented yet in front of you there, whether you had tenants for company now. I wonder if your mom's apartment was going to change ownership. She was suspecting something like that before I left. I'll be interested in knowing whether the same people are there or whether it's they're kind of cogitating on making a change of some kind. And I wonder if Esther's finished the book yet. She was reading that book that you gave her and was enjoying it so much. By this time, she ought to be almost through, I think. Sounded real interesting that she was, the parts that she was telling me about, and she went along wishing I could read it too. Let's see now. Well, anyway, that's that. We'll send this along, okay? Bye-bye.